Hello, and you are listening to I'm a Diva podcast, a podcast dedicated to promoting our female creatives in the music industry. So if you are any form of creator, a dedicated participant in the music industry, then we are here to promote you, to share your story, to share your challenges, and to grow together and to have some fun along the way and learn a thing or two. You are listening to I'm a Diva podcast. I'm a GV. I'm a female rapper in the music industry, growing to develop my career and facing challenges and noticing how females are underrepresented. This is why I decided to create this podcast for all of you to listen to and to promote our wonderful females and to be able to connect with others and learn from each other. So I welcome you to I'm a Diva podcast. Hello, and you're listening to I'm a Diva podcast. This is your talk show host, Edgy V, and we're back for another wonderful episode. This is season 2, episode 5. And today we're talking to Prediction. She is making her artist debut in September 2020. So Prediction brings her background in film scoring and production to blur the lines between current electronic soundtrack, indie, and popular genres. Although beginning her music journey at the age of 14 in hopes to produce and compose music for film solely. So the real name, she goes by Maria McGrath, but Prediction is her artist name. She took a huge influence from the Irish capital's indie electronic scene after studying in Dublin City, though only releasing her first single, Time, in late September 2020. As Prediction, Maria has already delivered thought-evoking and emotional soundtracks, premiering in film festivals throughout the globe. This influence sets the future listeners and fans of Prediction up for a vibrant, lush, nostalgic, and visual experience. Hello. Hi, Prediction.
Hi, how are you?
Thank you for coming on to the show. So you mentioned that you started music out from the age of 14. Mm-hmm. How did you find yourself in the area of music to begin with? So let's start there.
Oh, that's a really good question. I wasn't brought up, like, my parents weren't very musical. They weren't like playing instruments or anything. And my mom was very creative. She was an artist. But music was not something that necessarily was instilled into me. I kind of got into it through school and primary school because yeah. That's kind of what you have to do. But I got a pair of headphones and I used to have a hard time at school. So I didn't really like being on the bus talking to people that much because I didn't really get on with everybody on my bus, even though, you know, I can say today that they're lovely people. But I found it hard to socialize. So I would always have headphones on. And that was the start. That was the beginning of it all because I just used to listen to things on repeat, like songs on repeat, because I'd be here like, how do they make that? How do they make that sound like that? How does it sound so good? And I'm just kind of here. Then I would watch music videos and I'd just be like, wow, like, look at the visuals. Like, and it was just kind of putting, like, it started with music videos and headphones. That's pretty much it.
Who were your artists?
Oh, I was into pop at the time a lot. So I would listen to a lot of Rihanna. Rihanna, I was obsessed with Rihanna.
Yeah.
Still love Rihanna.
Great production.
Yeah. And I was really into Coldplay. I still am into Coldplay. Mm. I was really into Drake. I was really into like Lil Wayne, anything Young Money. I was into hip hop, kind of like commercialized hip hop. But I also got into kind of like soundtrack quite quickly from when I started playing guitar at 14. Mm-hmm. And I think the soundtrack that kind of did it for me was The Last of Us. It's a video game. Mm-hmm. So that soundtrack for me was me being like, to compose something like that to compose something like that and evoke emotion like that, that's a goal. Yeah. That's something that I would love to do. I think that was the beginning of it. And I didn't have a PlayStation at the time, so I had to watch all the walkthroughs on YouTube. So my main passion was video games. And then that's what actually drove me to kind of be like, how about you learn guitar? How about you learn how to actually write music for yourself? So that was actually the beginning of it, was actually other creative mediums.
So what was the guitar that your first instrument?
Yeah. Guitar was, yeah. Well, if we're not going to count tin whistle, we're not going to count tin whistle that everybody had to learn.
I think tin whistle is like mandatory instrument that we're supposed to learn. So I don't know if that was like free will choice.
I haven't played the tin whistle in over 10 years, but I actually don't, longer than that. But I promise you, if you hand it to me, I could probably play Rattle and Bog like most of memory. Like, it's instilled into you. You kind of have to. Okay. If we're not counting that, though, guitar was the first instrument. I used to sing a lot when I was a kid too, and I used to write a lot of poetry and stuff and stories. So I think I was always a storyteller. I think that was always kind of the main thing I started with, was I used to write. I used to hate reading, but I loved writing. Mm-hmm. It was very weird. I think that's all of this stuff kind of like, that's kind of what elevated me to be like, I think for me, it was always not realizing and not having the vocab to actually say it, but I could say it now. I could translate it to me being like, I have a perspective that I want to share. And I just think sound is the best way to do that. Because it's just what I get. It's just what I obsess over. Mm-hmm. But you know, again, like just even from the bio, I do film. I do soundtrack for film. Mm-hmm. And I like, even the music I make is very kind of like that soundtrack vibe. So my whole, I'm very visual with my music, mm-hmm. and I'm very visual with my vision. Mm-hmm. So everything, it's a bit of everything. I think as time goes on, I don't think I'm just going to be a music artist. Mm-hmm. So, and I think if things go the way I want them to, or even better, then even better,
I like that.
Yeah. Even better. I think we'll see where it goes, but it will be much more than just music.
Yeah,
it's going to be bigger than that, I think. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily in a famous way, but it'll just be more visual and more storytelling, and it'll evolve into something else.
I love that. I love that. Do you think the whole poetry and writing and the musical aspect was kind of a big part of kind of managing your mental health and venting and kind of sharing, connecting with yourself and kind of learning to understand yourself better?
Yeah. I think any person who knew me growing up knew I was very quiet. Not so much now. I was very quiet growing up, and I wasn't very good at communicating, and that was down to the house I kind of grew up in. And that's not a shade on my parents or my family. It just was what it was, and it was just the situation it was. And I think when it came to poetry and writing, my dad could probably even say, you know, my dad wouldn't really, he used to really like what I would write. Like, and he, you know, he's not someone like, it's not the, he's a man of few words. But I remember I wrote a story, and my mom used to be, she used to kind of really keep an eye on what I was doing creatively because she was into art. Yeah. And I remember he said something when he read it. Now, maybe, obviously, again, I was like 11 when I started writing this book, and I think I wrote maybe two chapters of it. I obviously didn't go forward with it because it was a lot of work for a 10 or 11 year old. and he was like, this is something people would read, like. And I remember him saying that. And I think that's what my goal is with anything. It just needs to be something people can relate to. If the fact that, like, all it was a story about my friends, and I just put it into the sci-fi sort of feeling, mm-hmm. kind of novel. And again, I didn't like reading. So I did not like reading, but I think putting pen to paper made it easier for me to communicate. And I think that helped my parents maybe see, because I had a hard time in school, maybe see that, okay, she's not lazy per se, but I just have my own way of kind of expressing myself. I kind of got out of writing when I became 14, when I became a teenager, and I started getting into, like, I had headphones, like, not great headphones, but headphones that I just listened to music back to back. I'd have so many songs on my phone. I would just always have people, like, I'd always have the new thing, things on YouTube, finding stuff on YouTube, sharing it in class, that kind of thing. That was kind of my thing. That was just my thing, was just finding music and listening to it. And then I started playing guitar, and that's kind of how it all went into what it went to.
Yeah. So, yeah. Gosh, I love that. I love hearing all that. And it sounds like even just hearing sometimes that those words of like validation from your father, you know, mm-hmm. that like at 10 years old, like that's something that people would read. That in itself is already going to have such a major powerful impact on your brain, mm-hmm. kind of like, wow, like he believes in me and I'm only 10 years mm-hmm. old. So like, I can assure you that like that had a powerful impact and kind of for you to continue to pursue your creative outlet So in terms of kind of like, obviously your writing style, you still create, like write lyrics and all of that. Do you still do get,
yeah,
or are you focused more on the sound?
Yeah, I remember meeting you in second year. I think we swapped lyrics at one point, and I did. I used to be into writing lyrics, and I think I'm actually not a bad lyric writer. That's the thing. When I was younger, I actually used to write lyrics as well, but I never had an instrument, so I would just write lyrics and try and sing and try and remember the melody.
Yeah.
And because I didn't have an instrument, so I couldn't take it down. And I still write lyrics? I actually don't think I've written lyrics in a long time, I'd say a good few months. And I think my thing is the sound, and that's always how it's been. And it's not because I listen to sound first and lyrics second. That's what I am in songs. So for me, if I can get the song right, the lyrics come easy. That's how it is for me. I'm not really a vocal performer. That might change, but for now, I'm not really a vocal performer. So if you can feel what I'm trying to convey, the lyrics come after. Yeah. So for me, it's always about that first. And that comes hugely from just soundtracking, because you never know when you're working the script or not, but pretty much every soundtrack I've written has never had lyrics to the score.
Yeah, I feel like from what I'm hearing, I'm getting the sense that you had the progression from the earlier days when you were like writing the stories, and that was like your earliest kind of way of expressing yourself. And I think it progressed then into kind of like writing the lyrics and then adding learning the lyrics, and kind of when you sing, so now you're accompanying the sound instead of just like reading something. And then obviously the acoustic, the guitar came into play, and then then you started getting into production. So I think that was just your progression of you into kind of expressing yourself through sound. And lyrics can be limiting to an extent, so I totally agree. And the melody can sometimes just have such a major impact with no lyrics absolutely in it. And I think that's where you progress now, to say, how can I say what I wanted to say without first putting in the lyrics? So I totally agree with that.
That's it. It's like, and even just adding to that, like when it comes to lyrics and words, I think most people say things quite similarly. And that, not always, it does matter how where you put certain words and how you actually phrase something. And of course, that's going to make a difference. But when it comes to sound, I think that's actually, for me, it's the only real way that you are actually going to hear what my perspective is, So like for it doesn't matter. Like I could tell you, just for example, my new track is very contrasting. It's kind of like a shoulder ranger to my first track that I released, Time. Mm-hmm. And Time is much more about kind of being trapped and kind of like the fear of being trapped, pretty much. Mm-hmm. And Tube, which is my new single, Tube is more about kind of literally the relief and escape. So it's kind of the opposing to it. And the thing is that I could tell you, listen, I just want to get out of here. And I could say it in the most beautiful way I could. You won't feel it. You need to feel what I'm saying. And I feel like that's the best way that someone can understand, just get a glimpse of understanding. And I think, that's the thing with my dad. Like, that it's the same thing. He said what he said when I was younger, but he actually said something to me a few weeks ago. was like, he just said, and like, again, a man of few words, this counts for 100 hoax. He was like, oh, you should just release some, more music. And that is worth that's worth any Grammy. And that kind of thing. And he doesn't necessarily it's not his style of music, but he believes in it because he kind of has always started to believe. Mm-hmm. So that to me means, okay, my sound's working, because if it's getting someone like him to understand me,
then that's beautiful. I love that. Okay, let's delve a little bit into your current track. So to anybody listening, this either will be already released or will be a week away or something like that from being released. So just keep up to date on prediction socials, and all will be added in the description. But I now wanted to ask a little bit of the current track and how your creative process might have changed to how you used to approach your work and how you approach your work now. And is your newest track do you feel like it's in comparison to Time? And the track now, do you think it's different to the creative approach that you took? Can you give us a little bit of insight?
One of the biggest things is Time was actually written for something, for a fashion show. It was actually written for New York Fashion Show. I was presented with an opportunity to have tracks part of New York Fashion Week for an Irish designer. Now, I don't think it ever got used, but that's okay. It's like, to be honest, if they didn't ask for it, I wouldn't have created Time. Mm-hmm. And Time was written as kind of, I guess, at a point in Time was written when I had finished third year, but I was about to go into fourth year, and I was still working on my fourth year projects, and I was working on films, and I just felt like I had no idea where I was going, and I felt like I didn't have life figured out. And my dad was always trying to remind me, you're not supposed to, you're 22. Mm-hmm. But time was very much kind of a mix of, it was influenced by, like, I'm going to just say Nuges because that's how I know him as. So I've been pronouncing his name as. And his track Dreams, and it was and kind of mixed with kind of Drake, mm-hmm. kind of like modern hip hop at that time. And it was kind of a mix of both those things. And it was very dark kind of vibe, but there was still kind of a burst of, like, it was very bright sounding and feeling. And I think Time was kind of the track, although I had made tracks like that before, they weren't as good as Time. Mm-hmm. And Time felt for me the beginning. So Time was written actually like in 2019. And it wasn't released until, it was written in July 2019. It wasn't released until September 2020. Okay. And because I had an idea for it, and I went and I was working with an animator, and I said, hey, I'm going to present you with an idea, and I don't have a budget, but if you aren't comfortable, it's fine, but I would really like to work on a music video for this. I have an idea. Mm-hmm. And she agreed to it. And I worked on some films with her afterwards that have done very well. And she worked on it with somebody else. Yeah, it's an animated music video. And in that time, I had obviously written a few more tracks that kind of followed Time that came after it. Tube was one of them. Tube was written in December. Well, it started being written in December 2019, and it finished in just at January this year. Mm-hmm. And Tube was kind of at a point where I think I had just sort of, it was kind of in response to Time a little bit. Tube was very much kind of about just getting out. Mm-hmm. And not having the fear anymore of just wanting to go. Mm-hmm. I think at that point I was kind of like, I love college, I love Dublin, I love what I'm doing, but mm-hmm. I'm okay to let it go soon. And I think that was what Tube was for me. And funnily enough, it was released right before COVID. So for a song about escape, I didn't have much escaping I could do afterwards. But I think that's why I'm releasing it now. And I think that's why I'm really happy to release it now. I actually didn't want to release it until next year. But I said, no, I'm going to release it now. I decided that in the summer. And I think it's needed, because I think it's a perspective worth hearing, first of all. But I think I need it. I think I need it to be out there. It's really funny to me. Time was kind of about expressing. I actually think Tube is just about healing myself. I really do feel like Tube is a healing remedy for me. Mm-hmm. I love it. I really do. I am the biggest fan of my own music, and I have it in a playlist. And whenever I feel like a bit of let's envision something, yeah, I put Tube on. And it's really cool that I can actually, going from someone who is like 14 or 13 having her headphones on, and like, how do they do it? Now I'm listening to my music and envisioning it. Like, and it's cool. Like, and I can honestly say, oh, I really love my music. And I hope to do that for somebody too. It'd be
so
cool to have
so that. Many artists like have such difficulty, like they make the music, but then, you know, there's obviously the relationship they have with the creativity aspect of it is kind of saying to yourself, am I being authentic, or am I just doing it to kind of hit the charts or get picked up by a label? Like, do you feel like you've always kind of maintained an authentic journey in kind of how you approach and create your, like, what do you do to kind of say to yourself, what questions do you ask? Do I like this? Or like, what are people gonna think? How do you go through the process of saying this is authentic to me?
That's a very, very, very good question, because it's a really important question to me. Mm. Because it used to be a point where, and it's still an attitude, well, if you're not picked up by a label, like this is by people in my family or my town. Mm. But how are you going to make money if you're not picked up and you're not making a lot of listens? And it's a fair question. Mm-hmm. But the thing is that, like, it's not that I want to be a starving artist forever, but I really feel like, and some people might disagree with me, and I just feel like this is where the importance of humility comes in. Like, it's not that I'm opposed to signing to a label, and it's not that I'm opposed to kind of like presenting myself in a way that I'm not used to, but it's kind of like, it's even just like starting this whole thing, I'm not used to being in a spotlight. I'm really not. That's why I picked production. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I think for me, my intention is, look, I think that was the biggest question I had to ask myself, is what is your intentions with doing this anymore? Because mm-hmm. if your whole goal is to be famous, what's going to happen once you're famous? Because then you're famous. Mm-hmm. Who cares about that?
Yeah.
And the thing is, that might not even happen. And it might happen in a different way to how I imagine. And that's fine. All of that is fine. But at the end of the day, like, there are plenty of people who have, you know, there are plenty of instances. There's plenty of artists that are there's plenty of artists that are famous that we don't remember the names of anymore. Mm-hmm. I really feel like the whole point of what I'm doing, and this is why I do film as well, is, again, I just want people to feel. I just need people to feel. That's it.
Mm.
I think that's why I'm doing electronic music. There's so much and so much you can venture into. It's everything. Mm. It's not just a matter of like just putting things through oscillators and just like letting it beep until something sounds good. Mm-hmm. But it's just, I just feel like, and again, it's the other reason why I don't delve into lyrics. I just want someone to feel. So a lot of this is to do with how you connect with people. I remember I was following a live stream of an artist I'm a big fan of, and I actually submitted to, and it got in. And this guy, like, he's had his samples used by like producers of Justin Bieber and shit. So like he's doing fine for himself.
Mm-hmm.
But what I loved about him and why I keep following him is because he's an introvert. He's not comfortable with doing this stuff. But he was listening. He usually kind of like will listen to a song and he'll skip to his part and be like, yeah, it's really cool, because he has to go through a lot of songs.
Mm-hmm.
He listened to Chew from start to finish. And I'm talking about the intro as well. There was an intro part. So it was nearly a 6-minute track. He listened to it start to finish on his stream. And all he had to say was that was beautiful. And forget about that. The amount of people that were messaging me afterwards, that's what I'm trying to do. That's what I'm trying to get. There are people that I would listen to that I'm a fan of that contacted me that might not be necessarily famous, but they contacted me saying like really good stuff and listen to it more than once. And I'm like, that's what I'm trying to do. That's what I'm trying to get done. Yes, again, like I don't want to be a starving artist, but I think that will be, I think I'm going to get there. I think I'll be fine.
Yeah.
I'm meeting everything. I've already met all the things that I want to do. Maybe not in a huge capacity, but I have, just to give that as an example. And when you have someone that you're a fan of, literally just being captivated by what you're doing, you have to be doing something right. Like you can't be doing something wrong. If somebody with similar intentions to you could be like, yeah, that's part of it. Like it's good.
Yeah. I like that what you mentioned about, you know, sending the track to the guy, and it kind of shows that, you know, you are putting yourself out, that you're not like saying, oh, I'm an introvert, so I'm not going to do anything about it.
Yeah.
You're going to find more anyway, you know,
you
don't have that mentality. So that's the most important part, which is what I like. Mm. Now to our listeners, before myself and Maria, well, AKA Prediction, we're talking about synthesizers. And since we touched upon oscillators and all of that, we were talking about electronic music and kids. Let's talk a little bit about what we were talking about. So you said you have this kind of mentality about how kids should be raised and kind of practicing using technology and then just whole this whole thing. Do you want to go into that a little bit?
For sure. I think so. We were kind of talking about how there's not that many women in production, and that it's actually decreased in recent years. And hopefully, it's going to start rising.
You actually did a survey for college, didn't you? So you can.
Yeah, it was like a research essay. Yeah, I kind of used a lot of stuff from AES and which is like Audio Engineering Society and a lot of theirs. And I had a lot of different references that are quite reliable, and also from students like me that have been diving into this. But it's one of the biggest factors is that there's a gender imbalance in the industry. And I think one of the most important things that we were touching on was, it's not necessarily that when I say this, I'm not saying that like, oh, men are actively like not including women. It's not that. It's like, and if it is too, if you are a man actively not involving women, what, I don't know what you're doing. But like, regardless of all that, when you, like, all I know is when I was being brought up, I wasn't necessarily pushed to technology in a way to learn about it. And I wasn't necessarily pushed to practical forms of education or practical jobs, because that's typically where men do well in, and that women do well in more empathetic roles. And that's why there's more music teachers are women, whereas men are more inclined to go in towards production or performance, and like women are more inclined to go towards composition or education. And that was just something I found at the time. And it's all statistics. It's not necessarily like, I mean, it's not true for everybody, but it is true from my experience, because the majority of women I've learned theory from, sorry, the majority of teachers I've learned theory from are women.
Mm-hmm.
The majority of education I've received are women, and the majority of our course, and Egla, remember this, was men getting into sound production.
Yes.
So it's not like it's a lie. And it's not like we can avoid and say, oh yeah, but women are given the same opportunity. You could put a keyboard, if you put something like a circuit or something in technology in front of maybe people in their 20s or just adults, and let's say their upbringing wasn't necessarily brought up like, you know, let's just say that in a way they're brought up in a society, or they're brought up in a place where they weren't necessarily given the opportunity to actually engage with this stuff when they were younger, or they're not used to technology. even just like a good example is just the older generation today not necessarily being able to adapt as quickly to technology as we are. They're not going to necessarily go to it or be hyped for it. And I think that's what one of the main problems is. And that's why I was saying it to Eglet, like that I've had so many business ideas where I'm just like, why don't you just get kids into electronic music and just introduce it in schools? Because music is not, if anything, music is starting to be a little bit let go of in education. And it shouldn't be that way. It's such an essential, playing an instrument is the one thing that lights up all parts of the brain. And that's not going to go away with electronic music. And it's a completely different way of learning theory. I was brought up learning theory. I was brought up, like, all my education that I was getting in music was theory-based before I went to college. And learning electronic music was difficult, but, like, it's incredible. Mm-hmm. And it's the direction that everything's going in. I think the future is producer, and like I think we need to be bringing up kids in a way that, like, instead of just saying, well, look, nobody plays flute anymore, so what's the point of teaching flute in school, why don't you just give more of an option and engage all kids in this? Because I think you need to start as early as you can, and that's how you get a better balance in the industry. That's what I think. Maybe I'm thinking too idealistic. But, you know, nobody can argue.
I think you're making fair points that, you know, there's so many different sides to it. And I think you're touching upon a kind of that it does start somewhere, and that there needs to be a little bit more diversity approach. And of course, education system, I think just the reality is that our education system can't keep up with the evolution of humanity. And the reality is, especially with the information age, you know, updating our education system is completely, you know, goes out of date so fast. You know, mm-hmm. courses are constantly updated, but before they're updated, they're already outdated. So, you know, mm-hmm. it's just the reality of it. It's just, it needs to be caught on much quicker because it just can't keep up with our evolution, but we need to do our best to do so. And yeah, I think what you're saying makes a lot of sense. So, Maria, and AKA prediction. I'm gonna just say I prefer calling Maria, but
call me Maria. Fire away.
Remind our listeners that her artist name is Prediction. So we're gonna jump into the part of the podcast called "I'm a Diva 5 Questions." Mm-hmm. And we're going to start with number one. Mm-hmm. What's the best way for a diva to start her day?
I do is and this is such a basic one. My room can be, like you can see right now in the video call, there's stuff on my bed, but the bed is made. I think you should make your bed. I think that's the first thing you should do. Because if you make
do you know bed, what's everything... funny? I think you told me that in college, and I've been making my bed ever since, because
really,
it really helps people with like depression and stuff.
That's brilliant. Because I definitely had a point there after I finished my thesis, when I was going through a bit of a low. I was like, I'm not getting out of bed, and it doesn't need to be made. Mm-hmm. But I know that's like, and that's the start of an incentive to maybe go forward. I'm very bad for cleaning my room, but I do make my bed. So I think that's a good way to start. And all I do is literally, one of the big things, especially with the pandemic at the moment and lockdown, I'm currently temporarily unemployed because of everything. So I think one of the things is I have more time for music stuff. So make a list. You don't have to do everything in that day. You don't have to get it all done. Just make a list of things you want to do and just do them, and make time. This is the key. I'm very bad for not making, like, getting, beating myself up for relaxing. Make time and go for a walk and say, yeah, I'm gonna play Call of Duty for now.
Yeah.
So that's what I do.
Yes.
Or two in my case. So
I love that. Yeah. That's great. Number two, what do you think the ultimate diva mantra is?
For me, I had to Google mantra. for me it was, I have to remind myself all the time, because I get so overwhelmed, is I'm capable. Just say it to yourself whenever you're in a high stress situation. Just say that you're capable, because it doesn't mean that it's going to end up perfect, but you're capable of doing it. You're capable of being there. There's a reason you're there. You're capable. That's my one.
I love that. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna use that now more in every day. So number three, what do you think the ultimate diva quality is above all others?
Humility. And I'll say that nobody can tell me different. Humility is the most important thing, because you can be confident, but if you need to be able to have a balance between your ego getting the best of you and confidence, it's key. That can get you in a lot of tricky situations if you're not able to be able to call yourself out. Get good at calling yourself out. Get good at calling yourself out in your mistakes, and get good at criticizing yourself. Not over criticizing yourself. Just being able to be like, okay, I could improve in how I played that, you know, played that session. I could improve in how this arrangement is. I can improve in whatever it is. It doesn't matter what it is. Just get good at correcting yourself and congratulate yourself for the things that you do well. Mm. That's humility as well.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, that's a good one. Number four, can you describe your ultimate diva achievement to date?
This one's a really hard one because I get very bad at marking my achievements. But I think I could say that by February 2021, I'll have 6 short films that I've composed for in the last year and a half. The last 2 years. Mm-hmm. And right now it's 4 films. I have 4 films that I've finalized and finished. And I think that's good. I think that's an accomplishment.
Congratulations.
And I've had films play across the world, and they've been the soundtracks have been recognized for awards and nominations, so that's something that I definitely think is my biggest one.
That's incredible. I'm so proud of you.
Thank you
Number 5, which is the last question for I'm a Diva 5 questions, what's your diva deal breaker in work or personal life?
It's really, and I've noticed this recently with a lot of friends that I have, that I love with all my heart, but sometimes I have to take a little step back. If people who always respond with, I can't, but it won't work that way, and it doesn't work that way, and things don't work that way, once in a while is fine. But if all you're going to respond with is, oh yeah, but from what I can tell, no, it's not going to work. I can't. That gets draining, and that gets in your head. And when you're someone who's creative and you're trying to drive yourself in this industry, you can't have you can't have people that say that you can't, you know. That's one of the things. So I think for me, whether it's work or personal life, it's someone who's kind of coming in with a heavy head and negative expectations. I will stop working with them, and I will take distance from them if they're in my personal life.
So, thank you. As you mentioned, you know, during the lockdown, you said you felt like, okay, I might be able to do a lot of other things, but I have time to be creative. How did you find yourself in terms of kind of your creativity? Have you been feeling more inspired? Did you have to find yourself to kind of nourish and nurture that inspiration? What did you do?
Well, the first part of lockdown was actually pretty good because I was doing my thesis and I wasn't working. So I didn't have a job while I was doing my thesis. So I had my free time was going to music. And I actually entered B competitions and made connections with people. And I just submitted to some Twitch streams and talked to people. And that was actually one of the biggest them, is just getting part of Discords and getting part of music communities. Mm-hmm. And just making... I made a lot more stuff coming up to the deadline of my thesis because I was so stressed than I did like at the start of the year. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of it was just me making stuff for the sake of making stuff. But recently, in this recent lockdown, it's been the complete opposite. I don't think I've made anything. Actually, I recorded like 9 TikToks of me ranting at 2 a.m. that are in my drafts. Of me being like, I'm not inspired, and that's fine. And like, that was me being like, I'm not inspired. I think up until 2 weeks ago, I hadn't made anything I loved in like 3 months at all. Like, I was working on soundtracks that were great and stuff, but I hadn't finished or made anything that I really, really loved. And it's been hard. And I think a lot of it was me being like, do you know what? If today all you want to do is play Call of Duty, go play Call of Duty. Yeah. If all you want to do today is chill out. Don't make a habit of like avoiding responsibility, which is something I need to keep disciplining myself on. But it's just kind of being okay with taking a break, because I think at this point, I think I put so much into time and so much into the soundtracks that I just kind of, it's okay. It's understandable to be drained. And I can't make 10 beats in a day. I can't make a track a day. I can't. I can start something every day. I do sound design every day, but I don't like... I'll record loops down and save them for later, but I can't make like a fully fleshed out arrangement in a day. I just like I can't do it every day anyway. So, and it's just not how my brain works. So, you know, I got okay with that when I found out that's how Billie Eilish does it as well. So I got more comfortable with myself and how I think, because
yeah,
it turns out there's successful artists that think the way I do too. So that's good, because yeah, I think hustle culture can be toxic.
Yeah.
And it's very prominent on Twitter. So yeah.
Yeah, I agree. Thank you for touching upon that. I think people completely underestimate the aspect of rest and the aspect of reflection, and just honoring that part of kind of silence within yourself between, you know, continuing on into something else. Because I think, especially with music, it's so easy to fall into a rut of making the same thing over and over again if you don't reflect, if you don't rest, if you don't give yourself a time to reset a little bit and regroup, and kind of maybe instead of constantly making music, maybe go watch a new video of kind of how other people are producing, or, you know, just kind of give yourself always new avenues to say, how can I approach this maybe a little differently, and come back with new fresh head, fresh ideas. So thank you for touching upon that. So we're on to the last part of the podcast that I love to ask all of my guests. What do you think the future looks like for females in the music industry?
Oh, I think we're going to see a big rise in female producers. And just actually not even just that, just anybody who's identifying outside the binary, anybody who identifies as a woman. I think we're going to be seeing a lot more perspective and a lot more on that. And I think that's already started to grow and change. I know I made a point in the podcast earlier where, like, there's been a kind of a drop in producers, especially like women in production. But I think that's going to change. And I think I'm hoping for it to get to a point, like, I'm hoping for it to get to a point where it becomes about kind of, you know, if I ever win an Oscar for composition,
or
win an award, that it's not going to be a case of like, oh, she's one of how many women to win this. Like, I think that's great. Yeah. And I think it's always good to acknowledge, but I think it's also good to be like, I'd love for it to be, one of the most common things I see is the only reason that she's doing well is because, you know, she's a woman. And the only reason, you know, she's getting more promotion because, you know, there's so much more push for minorities. And I'm like, yeah, but I think talent and I think hard work are not exceptions, like as often as some people might feel they are when it comes to these things. And I would just like to be recognized for what I do and respected for what I do. And, you know, just have it be that. I think that's pretty much it. I think the thing about music and the thing about anything creative, it's about perspective. And people don't realize, like, when you have a group of people that aren't getting their voice, like, there's a perspective there that is unique and that's worth sharing, that no matter what, and especially if you are part of, it doesn't matter if you're part of any minority or if you're part of any if you're part of any kind of, I guess, a press group, there's a unique perspective there that's worth sharing. And I'm just hoping to see more of that. That's what I hope for it. And like, I work with a lot of women in, I think the majority of people I've worked with in film are women. And that's not on purpose. They're coming out. Like, it's rising up. There's a lot more. And the best thing about being part of a group of people that doesn't get the representation that we necessarily really want or they deserve, is that they work harder, and that's going to trump anything. Mm-hmm. That's going to trump any controversy, I think, in the last few, not controversy, but it's going to trump a lot of negative attitudes or misconceptions that people have about women in the industry. Talking to you, Smiley. I don't even know if you heard about that. Yeah. In the future. And I think that's going to come out in a way that people don't expect. So yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
Thank you so much, Prediction, for coming onto the show and sharing so many in-depth views. You brought so much value to this episode. I really can't wait for your new song to come out. Like I said to our listeners, it should be already out by the time you guys are listening to this. So do go.
And there'll be another one on the way.
So just keep up with Prediction on her social media. And she also has another separate page for her film for music, isn't it? Do you want to talk a little more about that before we finish up?
Yeah, I have a separate account on my Twitter. I have a Twitter and a separate, I'm more active on Instagram than I am Twitter. I prefer Instagram, especially for film stuff. My current handle is Composed by Maria. If you want to look, literally, it has background stuff for prediction as well and everything. Mm-hmm. And I'm hoping to post more in the new year and share some reels and share some films I've worked on and what I'm working on at the moment. So you can follow that for those things. And you can follow Prediction Music on Instagram, and it's Prediction Music on Twitter, but it's with an X instead of an O in prediction. That's complicated. But
yeah, no worries. All of our listeners, don't worry. All of the description, the will be in the description, and you can keep up with everything that Prediction is doing. Thank you so much for coming on to the show, and thank you to all our listeners. Until next time.
Yeah. I'm a Diva podcast launched their Patreon account. So if you like what we do and want to support us, head over to our link, and there will be some exclusive content for exclusive subscribers. So head over there now, and thank you so much for your support.